I am happy to announce our 2024 Banking with Life client-only event. It's going to happen Friday, October 25th, beginning with a pre-event social mixer. The day of the event is Saturday the 26th, followed by an after party. It's going to happen downtown Fort Worth. I will be speaking there. Others will be speaking as well. You'll have the opportunity to meet me, and I'm looking forward to meeting you. You'll have the opportunity to meet the whole Banking with Life team and a room full of people that practice the infinite banking concept from all over the country. Last year, we had about 130 people from 30 different states. The year before that was really good, too. This year is going to be even better. We're going to have educational presentations and talks, and that should be important to you if you're practicing the infinite banking concept. I can't wait to see you. In this episode, I sit down with my friend Liz as she shares her experience with the infinite banking concept and how she would like women, mothers, and families to know the financial opportunities that the infinite banking concept can provide. We had fun and hope you enjoy listening. Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery, and regular listeners know that I love it when people come in person to the studio and spend their time with us. And I'm really excited today that I have my friend Liz Denny with me. We've known each other make 3.5-4 years. Salt of the Earth lady, has a wonderful story with her experience in infinite banking and just a life story here. So I'm excited to have you, Liz, and I'm excited to have this conversation. Welcome, and tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. When I was so nervous when I said, yeah, I'd love to do a podcast, I literally was like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. But
can't believe I said that.
Here we go. So thank you for having me. Really, like, Alvarado is so cute. Yeah. It's the first time I've driven downtown.
The world headquarters of Banking with Life, right?
So, my story is pretty interesting. I guess, where do you even begin? My father did insurance.
No, I didn't know that.
And his father did insurance.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they both did. My dad tried to get me to become an agent for years and years and years. And
I had no idea, or I don't recall that at all.
Yeah,
no. That's awesome.
Okay. Yeah. So what was really interesting is when he graduated, passed on, it was 2020. It was February of 2020. And he had a life insurance policy. He had a whole life policy.
Okay.
And, you know, he only did the minimums for it. So it was just whatever the face value was.
Probably just typical, traditional whole life.
Yeah. And he had purchased one for me when I was a child. And, you know, he sort of told me a little bit about it, but I didn't really understand any of this. I was just like, well, you know, a life insurance policy is like for whoever you leave behind, right? Like, okay, cool. I guess I'll keep paying on it.
Thanks, Dad.
Thanks, Dad. But he didn't.
Oh, he made you pay the premium too.
Well, he gifted it to me when I got to be a certain age.
Okay.
Right. And so he signed it over to me as the owner. But
did you feel like he was giving you a bill?
Kind of. Not necessarily. Like I knew that he gave me something that was important, but I didn't have any perspective on why it would be important for me, because at the time he gave it to me, I was in my 20s. Okay. But I didn't think I was ever going to have kids.
Okay.
And I was just like, so what's this for? You know?
Well, Dad, you spent your life in the insurance career and the grandfather, so thank you. Okay. Right. I don't want
to. No, no, no. Not to drag around on that, but it just to say that when he passed, you know, I didn't really have any education about it. I didn't really know much about it. You know, I thought it was for who you leave behind. I didn't realize that there was even this possibility of infinite banking. So he passes away. He leaves me an inheritance, which was generous. And I am so grateful for it, because it made me have to look into how to protect finances, how to grow finances. I'd been given a gift that gave me the opportunity to change my life. And I'm a Christian woman, and I really have a tight relationship with Jesus and God. And I I just kind of threw myself down and went, Lord, I don't know what to do with this.
So it's kind of like a financial gestalt therapy. You know, you've got things now you've got to be a good steward of.
Right. Yeah. And that's what that was my prayer is, Lord, teach me to be a good steward. Because what had happened right after my dad graduated, I realized I was pregnant.
Ooh.
Yeah. And, you know, and my husband and I had wanted to get married, have children. I wanted children really, really bad. And so it had been years and years and years of trying and thinking it was never going to happen. And then suddenly, boom, here we are. And I have the inheritance. Like, everything changed in a matter of weeks.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was really overwhelming. But I did. I was like, Lord, what do I do? Show me. You know, because I'd been learning about, you know, how to do the stock market and how to do this and how to do that. And I'd been listening to all this stuff for years because I'd been trying to figure out how to make money and how to be able to, what do you do with it? And, oh, do you do real estate? How do you become wealthy? Right. So I'd been working on all this stuff, but then it came down to really seeing what happened in 2020 with the stock market and the dip and the people who made tons of money because they got out before because they knew it was coming. And I went, this is all just a scheme. It all feels like a scheme.
You just knew that intuitively.
Yeah.
Right. And by observation.
Just by watching.
Yeah.
And realizing they're exempt from it because, oh, they write the rules. Oh, wait a minute. What do they say about gambling? The house always wins because, wait, who's the house that writes the rules? Oh my gosh. So yeah. That all, like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, Lord, what do I do? And within days of that, I ended up seeing all of these videos come up in my YouTube feed about Nelson Nash and the infinite banking concept. And I started watching them and I was like, what is this? So then I started learning about it and you kind of have to be open to there's something better out there. Mm-hmm. There's an alternative to what you see all the time and what's pushed on you all the time, like pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed from all these different voices that are put on pedestals and are paid lots of money to tell you certain things. So
what a coinkydink.
Interesting, right? So there I am learning about Nelson Nash, learning about the infinite banking concept. And I'm pretty sure you guys had like released all this stuff because it was like honoring his life because he'd passed away the year before. Right. And what was so cool about learning about him is that I heard so many parallels. Like, he was a pilot. Oh, my dad was a pilot. He was an insurance agent. My dad was an insurance agent. That all these connections. And then he was talking about forestry. And I was like, when I first went to college, I went to Stephen F. Austin and I studied forestry.
Wow.
For a semester.
Classification is a big part of.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So
proper classification is important.
Yeah. And then when he's talking about thinking long term and generationally, well, that's how you have to do it when you're thinking about growing trees. And it's, yeah. So all of that to say, when I found it and I heard how it worked and I just ate up all the information and, you know, I think I had to wait until like the second trimester of my pregnancy before it all really, you know, because baby brain is a real thing.
Okay.
But that's when over the summer that
taking
I
over all the nutrients.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Took over everything. Child right. Took over my life.
Yeah. No question.
All of a sudden I'm waking up at 5 a.m. and I'm like, what? At 9 o'clock at night, years. I'm going to sleep and I'm like, what is wrong with me? So yeah. Okay. Immediately took over my life, but he's amazing. My son is 3.5. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Time flies.
It does. So yes. But then I found the Nelson Nash Institute online. I looked up the people on their list and I found you and I realized you were actually pretty close to me because I live north of Fort Worth and you're here south of Fort Worth. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And so then I found your website, started listening to your stuff and reached out and we had a conversation.
And that was in 2020.
In 2020.
In short order.
Yeah.
Well, thank goodness for proximity, huh? You know, and so I'm glad you live close.
Yeah.
And then, okay. So, I mean, from there, I mean, you became a client in 2020. I remember that. And, you know, and I remember some of the early conversations that we had. You want to get into any of that?
Yeah, sure.
I distinctly remember that, you know, I did, but I didn't know your, maybe I did, and I just don't recall it, that your father was an insurance agent. I think that's pretty cool.
We may not have had time to get to that point of, in the conversation.
I'm going to have to go back and look at my notes. But I do remember that you were like very newly married, you know, relatively, and you had an inheritance, and, you know, we had in-depth conversations about where you're at financially, what you're trying to do, and all of the appropriate conversation, which included Texas is a community property state. And I'm not giving any investment advice whatsoever, legal advice, no advice right here. I'm having a conversation with my friend and my client. And I only give advice to my clients. Okay. So that's my disclaimer. Mm-hmm. But in that conversation, you know, we talked about Texas being a community property state, and you were recently married, and commingling of money, and then separate assets include inheritances and gifts. And, you know, when the, on my side of the table, you know, as an agent, advisor, you know, when, you know, you have some uncomfortable conversations every now and then, but it is what it is. You know, some are just can be uncomfortable. Sometimes that conversation can be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about commingling money, and then when you're, you know, you're marrying someone, I mean, you're, there's a union there. And I don't remember if you were, I mean, you weren't angry at me for bringing it up.
No, I distinctly remember you saying at some point in the conversation, you stopped and you said, I have to advise you this. And I just feel it really heavy on me that I should say this. And I paid attention. I said, okay, yeah. And you said, you know, Texas is a community property state. And if you commingle all of your funds, if you ever get divorced...
And I hope you don't.
And I hope you don't. Of course, you put that in there. You said, if you ever get divorced, then it's impossible.
Half of his.
He gets to take, and you can't get it back.
Yeah,
you know, you gave me that warning. And in the moment when I heard it, I wasn't offended. I was like, yeah, stuff happens. You know, I'd already been divorced once. Like, stuff happens, you know, and I thought in that moment, I'm pregnant. I'm like, no, everything's going to be great. Now it's going to be fine. I'm never getting divorced again. And well, if you know, fast forward about a year and a half or so, and it was like, this is not working. I am in a disaster. I am in an absolute disaster. And, you know, stuff happens and we couldn't work it out. We really tried. You know, we did lots of counseling and we tried all the things, and you can't, sometimes you just can't get on the same page with somebody.
Right.
And that's just how it is. And because you'd given me that warning, I had been cautious about commingling funds. I had been slow to do it, and I had made sure that I kept my own bank accounts and kept my own money separate from our joint account. But whenever we needed anything for the house, there was a situation that this or that, I would move what we needed into our joint account, and I would, you know, I was a team player and we did the things, right? But even after I had gotten the inheritance, it wasn't very long before I started seeing signs that there was something off. And I don't know, and that might just be a whole nother podcast conversation for a whole nother situation, but you know, it's like people act a certain way once money changes, who people really are come out.
Well, I recall from, you know, that conversation, and I encouraged you to consider certain structures, certain holdings and cash flows, and which you did. And I don't know how much we had spoken between then, you know, it would be probably 2021 with deliveries and of the policies, because you wound up purchasing more than one. I mean, I don't want to say anything that you don't want said. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
But then we had our second client only event in October of last year, 2023.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And you attended, and I'm sitting there moving boxes in and out, you know, I'm loading and unloading, and you approached me, and I didn't recognize you.
Yeah. We'd never met in person before. We'd only spoken on the phone.
Okay. Yeah. But, you know, thank goodness we have name tags, right? But I immediately knew who you were.
Right.
And I don't remember the conversation exactly word for word or anything, but you approached me and was very appreciative. You wanted to point out that you were appreciative of what you had done, what we had done together, the work that we had done together and the structure. And then you said, you know, lo and behold, that, you know, you went through a divorce and you felt like you probably made some decent and good decisions or appropriate and correct. But then you also said, James, you know, women need to know.
Yeah.
Women need to be more educated financially in general. Mm-hmm. And then we had the conversation about the podcast as you coming on as a guest. And then lo and behold, here you are.
Here we are.
You know, it took a few months, but, you know, here we are.
Yeah.
And that was very touching to me, you know, because, you know, I've done this a long time and we all make mistakes. And although my mistakes don't cost my clients money. Okay. Sometimes, you know, you open up work you've done in the past and, you know, you're like, wow, this is pretty good. Whoever did this was, you know, they crossed the T's and dotted their I's and, you know, so I felt very good. I mean, I was very appreciative of you sharing that with me.
And I'm
still to this day very confident in the work that we did, and it turned out to be the right thing for you.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, in an unfortunate, no one could know, you know, situation, but sometimes that's the way the cookie crumbles. But even that, if that had not happened and we were still together, I still have these incredible policies that are built in such a way that, you know, they're protected and that they are growing. And
I wish your daddy could have seen this, you know, because he probably didn't know.
I can imagine him going, oh, Elizabeth, I missed it. Yeah. You know, like I just imagined him saying that when I found it.
But then again, too, you know, traditional, you know, whole life policies, and whether they're with a mutual company or not, they all have a cash value, right, that accumulates on a guaranteed basis, up one way, Einbahnstrasse, you know.
Yeah.
And they all have loan provisions. So I would not be shocked at all if your father and your grandfather, too. Your grandfather, that's a whole nother story. But it has a cash value. And I'm sure him, maybe, I don't know. But I would not be shocked if he himself and his clients, you know, had to borrow against policies from time to time. Very common.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then if we get into the generation of your grandfather in his time, that's where the majority of the all-American average family put money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't put money in the stock market to the extent in which they do today.
Right.
They bought whole life insurance because it had a guaranteed cash value.
Well, I mean, at the time that he would have been selling it, it would have been pretty, the stock market crash of 29 would have been very fresh.
Yeah.
Right. And so they were looking at other avenues. They had to have been. And then, you know, it's just amazing how generationally we are dumbed down.
Yeah. I don't have it. And I know I've mentioned it before, but I have read about, heard about more than one time over my career that there was a particular mutual company. I just don't know who they are. And if you know, please share it with me. If you can, you know, if we can document it and have a source, that'd be great. So it's hearsay, right? That a life insurance company paid dividends in gold in the early 1930s during the Depression to make a point because there was a run on the banks. No question, it was all set up, you know, it was all controlled and, you know, that's all documented. But the life insurance, there was also a run on the life insurance companies as well.
Yeah.
Right. Well, they happened to have the capital.
Yeah.
And they paid dividends in loans. This particular company that I've heard about several times over my career, they paid dividends in gold in one year to make the point that they had capital.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then you look at mutual funds now. I mean, back in the day, 30 years ago when I started, I believed in buy term and invest the difference, and you invest the difference, quote unquote, into mutual funds, right? I say 30 years ago is 30, a little more. Okay. But, and just going back to then, so I bought into that concept, right? The first mutual fund wasn't created until like 1934, 1935. Right. And it wasn't the average individual that put money in mutual funds. They might go buy stock if they were really affluent people.
Right.
And then, you know, the qualified plans come along in the 80s and, you know, and everybody has mutual funds, families. But then I also remember trying to explain a mutual fund, the mechanics or why people would put money into mutual funds. And they would look at you like you were in left field, you know. Oh, I can't. Now everybody puts money into the stock market and mutual funds because everybody else does, and who cares how they work?
Yeah,
almost right. And then you look at today, trying to explain the infinite banking concept, or 20 years ago, 15 years ago, and then people look at you like
you
crazy.
Got two heads.
Yeah,
yeah. They like you got two heads. Like they want to know. My brother, my goodness, I gave him the. I brought a book. I have bought so many of these, by the way. I brought him the book. I said, read the book.
Becoming Your Own Banker by R. Nelson Nash.
Read the book. Yeah. He read it. He skimmed through it, got the concept in about a night. Yeah. We're talking about it the next morning. And he wants to know, well, what is the interest rate? Well, what are the rates? I want to know what my return's going to be. And I'm like, It changes. It changes based on so many things. You can't predict that part. Just know that it does. Right?
Let's boil it down to a particular characteristic, the rate of return or the cost of the death benefit by term and invest the difference. You know, you just want to narrow it down to one argument, and which is very common.
Right. And people want to talk about how they're so smart because you know that it'll make more money if you just invest in something at 12% per year. And I'm like, what is that vehicle? Because I want to know what it is. They keep saying this number, but they have no vehicle to guarantee that it's going to happen. And I'm like, whereas infinite banking gave me a vehicle to put my money outside of somewhere where it could dump at any moment and outside of where somebody could just snatch it from me, right? Where I can just let it sit there, let it accumulate, let it do its thing, and then I have access. And all I have to do is just put in a request. I do it on the computer, I put in a request and they say, great. And I have it set up for direct deposit and I have my money.
So those would be loans, which
right.
is if your I, access is
one,
loans.
Once I get, yeah, once you yeah. have cash value in there, then I can take a loan, and that's a tax-free thing to do. That's not an income. It's money I've already paid taxes on and it's just sitting there available for me to use, but I don't have to get permission. Right? So then I know people hear that all the time, but I'm going to say it again just because, well, repetition is how you learn things, right? So something you said that really, really sticks with me, and I say it all the time, capital attracts opportunity.
It does. I got that from Nelson Nash.
Capital attracts opportunity.
It does.
And so if you don't have a safe place to put your capital, when the opportunities arise, you know, you got it all stuck in a house, or you got it all stuck over here or stuck over there. Well, you got to go get permission to get it out, or you have to sell it, or you have to, it takes time.
Collateralize it, right?
Right.
Third party lender.
Right.
And then they're going to tell you when, how much, and how, and get all your CPA to sign off of it if the loan's large enough.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Anyhow, I don't know if I was ready to jump there, but.
Well, I don't want to, you know.
No,
you share with what you want.
I actually really wanted to go back to the client-only event.
Okay.
Because David, Nelson's son-in-law.
David Stearns.
From the Nelson Nash Institute. Mm-hmm. And he's the head of that now. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. He's a co-board member. He owns Infinite Banking, LLC. He owns all the copyright and the trademark and the books and the royalties to Becoming Your Own Banker.
Right.
Yep.
So he's standing up there at the event and he tells his story. He tells a story of a woman who's probably my age, who also got an inheritance like me. And he's explaining how she went somewhere. She shows up to him and says, hey, I have all of these policies here. And can you help me understand what's going on and how I can fix this? And he starts looking at her policies and he's explaining to us that she'd gone to someone who had set her up with this laddering strategy. And I don't understand all the details of that other than you buy a policy and then you use the cash value in that policy to buy the next policy. But what had happened is they'd stretched it out so much that she couldn't keep up with the premiums mm-hmm. and the interest to keep them in force. And he says, I can't fix this. And he's like, she lost all these assets she'd created. And it just kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. Because I was like, I didn't know enough. I could have gotten the wrong advice and been stuck in a similar situation. And that would have been crushing. I'm heartbroken for her.
Sure. The laddering, you know, that's quote unquote strategy. It's a commission revenue gen for the agent or advisor who promotes it, in my opinion. And so let's say here's how it ultimately works. Whatever the details were in their case, I have no idea. Take $100,000 in premium and you buy a policy. And you typically build they typically build Frankenstein type policies where you have as much cash available as early as possible. Something similar to 90-10 or 85-15, where 90% or 85% of the premium is paid to the PUA, the paid up additions rider, and then the other 10 or 15% of the premium is paid to a base premium, a base whole life policy. So you have a lot of liquidity in the first year. And then you collateralize that 90% in cash value you have from policy one. Right. So now you have a $90,000 loan check in hand. These are my numbers, my examples. I've seen many of them and I have helped many people get out of them. You can't always, sometimes it gets so bad it all has to be burnt down. And that's a tragedy. Mm-hmm. And hence part of the reason why I rail on the noise. And I know a lot of agents and advisors listen to this and I appreciate you and I appreciate the ones that appreciate me, the ones that, you know, I make angry. You know, it's like, God bless you. That's your choice. But you have a $90,000 check in hand. You go buy another policy, right? Mm-hmm. And so then you have about $80,000 in cash value or loan value. Then you go buy another policy and another policy. So it's laddering policies in the whole scheme or presentation. And they're all, they cherry pick time and they're not forthcoming or they don't, it's not a complete presentation of an outstanding loan. There's so many things wrong with that. It's not even funny.
Right.
And the life insurance companies don't like it when they figure out what you're doing, you know, hopefully they cancel your contract, but you wind up with, so you're trying to, you know, the promotion is along the lines of, well, you just pay $100,000 in and you're buying all these policies with that same cash flow where you're creating these outstanding loans that are going to compound, right? Because the loan repayment is never considered or talked about, right? And the death benefit doesn't matter. I'm only doing it for cash and all these things. And I've not seen one single time that has been successful.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's an IBC expert guru out there that does it all the time. Right. And I don't want to sound harsh. You know, there's an exception to every rule.
Sure.
But you have someone who does not understand necessarily the infinite banking concept, much less life insurance. And yeah. The promoters don't understand life insurance, in my opinion, either, or they wouldn't promote it. And they sure didn't get that from anything associated or affiliated with Nelson Nash. Not one ounce of any of that presentation, demonstration, design, strategy, whatever you want to call it, came from Nelson Nash. That is not infinite banking.
The book is not that long. It's really quick to read, and it's not in there.
It's not in there.
I've read it.
It's not in Nelson. In any video that you find on Nelson, where inclusion is never in there. But the people that promote that, well, you know, they know who Nelson Nash was, so they can say his name, and they can say infinite banking or infinite banking concepts, and, you know, they can say anything they want. So that's kind of the, you know, 30,000 foot view of the laddering strategy.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So that explains the why it didn't work for her, because all of a sudden she's got 3, 4, 5 policies that she's got to come up with.
Premium
and interest, because the interest from the first one that she took on the loan to get the second one. And now that one has interest, and then the next one has interest, and the next one has interest.
Compounding.
And it's like, are you making so much money a year that you have to have storehouses, that many storehouses today to fit that all into?
Yeah.
Right? Are you looking at making $1 million? Well, maybe this is a strategy for you. But if you're, you know, a regular person, like, okay. You know, even if I got an inheritance, just because I got an inheritance doesn't mean I'm going to be able to grow that money.
Or you're going to get another one.
Or I'll get another one. Right.
You know, and look, most of the time, and let me say, because I can hear in my mind the potential comments that I go, well, that's a legitimate strategy if you're expecting a windfall of $1 million next year. What if the windfall doesn't occur?
Yeah.
You know,
what if they change change the beneficiaries or the stipulations right at the last second. Like, you can't count on things, but you have to educate yourself so that if that happens for you, you know what to do with the money, right? Yeah. And that's the moment where people are just like, what is it? You're blinded, right? There's an excitement and an anticipation, and then there's this overwhelming, oh my gosh, you know, it's like the dog that catches the rabbit and doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so you can't count on that thing. But if it does happen, like, have you done the research? Are you ready to manage what's coming your way? You know?
And I'll move on, but there are better, legitimate, stable foundations and solutions to the laddering strategy.
Sure.
But you know, if you receive an inheritance like that, and not always, but most of the time, you know, and if you receive a large inheritance, you know, I mean, how many large windfalls are we actually going to enjoy in our life? I don't know. The future's unknown, but it's not like you get an inheritance every year, every 2 years or what have you. And then when you don't do your homework on the infinite banking concept, right, and it's presented to you with all the smoke and mirrors and the pixie dust, and it looks too good to be true. It probably is. You know, and then you put your money into it. Of course, then you know, your awareness goes up, and it's like, oh my gosh, you're probably penciling the numbers over and over. And I always say, and I say it for a reason, you know, there's never a problem until there's a problem. You know, there's no telling how many years. Maybe that worked great for a year or two. I don't know.
Right.
But the point in time came whenever she needed help, and whoever promoted that to her may be answering her phone calls, may be in the Caribbeans, may be in another industry. I don't know.
May no longer be an insurance agent at all.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, because I looked into doing insurance, I took the test. You know, I did phenomenal on it. I got over 90. It was super exciting. The guy who gave me my results was like, I've never seen anybody score this high.
Well, wow.
The cool part about that was because I'd already
scored that high or higher.
Studied. Well, he just hadn't seen it in that test. He was young.
He was new, huh?
I guess he was going to know.
When was this? When did you get your insurance? And do you still have it?
I didn't get licensed. I didn't finish getting licensed because I'm not going to name names or anything, but the whole thing that I was looking at getting into, I realized they're pushing people. You see, because I had enough education because I learned this.
So you went and took your
test
to get licensed to work with them.
Yeah,
the unnamed.
Yeah, people. And right. And what was cool was that I understood infinite banking so well at this point that when I went and I was taking the test, I'm like, oh, that's infinite banking concept. Look at that. It's hidden in plain sight. They're asking me questions about how this works. And so, you know, I think that's why I did so good on the test. But then also I was like going to the trainings on what they were promoting and how to talk to people and the salesy stuff and whatnot. And I'm like,
turn your stomach.
You know,
it would have turned your dad and your grandfather's stomach too.
Oh, yeah. I was like, no. Wow. That's really pushy. And then what they're saying, I'm like, you guys are not, you're not doing this. You're not helping people do this. And then what was even better is one of the guys who was, you know, doing all the training there and doing all the stuff. He's like, oh, can we just go over what you've done and da, da, da. And so I get on a on a one-on-one call with him over Zoom, and he gets his whiteboard out, and I talk to him about my stuff and my assets.
Okay, so this is after you became
this is after I am a client. I already have my policies and so on and so forth. And this guy starts talking to me about, no, well, let's talk about your assets. Let's talk about the numbers. Okay, tell me about your policies and what are those policies face value worth? And I told him, and he was like, and what are you paying on premiums? And I told him, and he was like, that's not possible. And I'm like, I'm like, yeah, it is. He's like, no, but he wasn't thinking about PUA. Paid up additions.
Of course not.
At all. And so
you didn't let him insult my character, did you?
I didn't.
No, I'm kidding.
I didn't use your name at all, but I was just like, I'm curious. Tell me, sir. I'm just a poor little woman. What do I know?
Yeah, not.
Like, I love being incognito under the radar. People never see me coming. Like, I know things and I've done things, and people are like, you? They're like, yeah, I just look like, you know, a soccer mom or the secretary. But yeah, so that's the fun thing about me. Anyway, so he's showing me all this stuff, and then he talks about my policies, and he's like, oh, well, you must have your numbers wrong. And I was like, no, that's really, this is it. And he's like, well, you know, and he starts downplaying the whole whole life insurance policy thing, and he starts shifting towards, you know, you've really done very well considering when you got, you know, most people by this time have lost everything, da 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 da. And then he says, you know, but we can fix this, because what you need to do is you need to be able to put this all into life insurance. And I was like, yeah, but you can't just put everything in right in the same time,
another,
because then you'll mech. Okay. You know, you'll mech and modified endowment contract, which means that it now becomes a taxable thing. And he's just like, well, not if you do an annuity, and I can set you up with an annuity and this, that, and the other. And I was like, I'm kind of young for an annuity, I think, but I don't know a whole lot about them. And I was like, well, I should ask you. But I thought it was interesting how much this dude wanted to get me into an annuity. And I'm like, how much are you making off of selling annuities? Because he pushed them so much. And I thought, it's got to be a commission thing more than anything. And that's my personal opinion. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think that, and I know you're not asking, but I think there is a place for annuities and age and duration, and what the purpose is trumps everything else in the product selection in all of the financial world, you know. So, but he couldn't get you into a life insurance policy because you're, it sounds to me like you maybe knew more than he did when it came to life insurance about the MAC. So he's looking for a sell for sure. And so do an annuity, and think about that. So, like in real estate, you can do a 1031 exchange, right? So like into like. So it just defers the taxation is what that does, right? 1031 exchange. But the basis transfers, and there's some tax, positive tax ramifications from that. In the life insurance world, you can do a 1035 exchange between life insurance companies and life insurance companies. The basis transfers. It's like to like owner, like beneficiary, and like insured, and what have you. you can also 1035 exchange from life insurance, tax-free, into an annuity, because it's an insurance contract, and the annuity is tax-deferred. Well, think that one through. Of course Uncle Sam will let you do that. Go from tax-free to tax deferred? Yeah, they're patient. Okay, but you cannot 1035 exchange from an annuity into life insurance.
Gotcha.
So you cannot take a tax deferred product and exchange it into a tax free product. You know, just one level of thinking, maybe a little deeper, and you ask why, maybe it's not important, but I digress. So he's looking for, he wants you to become a client. He wants to get paid, and he's just throwing whatever at you. My opinion, my verbiage, not hers, that you might buy. I mean, you know, so you're not going to buy life insurance, so you're going to buy an annuity. And of course you were too young. I say that she's my client. It is too young for an annuity,
right?
My opinion.
Okay. And that's the little I know about annuities, and I haven't really studied them much, but the little I knew, I was just like, that doesn't make sense. I'm not old enough that I won't still make a lot of money. You know, I have a lot of potential.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty active. So, yeah, yeah. It'd just be another place of locking up your money. I say that. I need to reframe that because if an annuity is appropriate for you, I don't know. You can do your homework. It may be, it may not be. But when it is appropriate, you know, whomever the advisor is at selling stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, that's what they want you to buy. The life insurance agent wants you to buy life insurance. The annuity promoter wants you to buy annuity. Right. And the people who don't like annuities, quote unquote, and they don't provide them to their clients, that's the terminology they use. You lock up your money, which is not complete. Right. So I shouldn't say that.
That was my other question about them. I was like, well, maybe I don't know something about annuities. Like, okay, you put your money in there. Well, are you allowed to take a loan off of that? I don't know. But I'm sure that depends.
Only if it's a 403B.
I'm sure there were a lot of different stipulations beyond that. And then he wasn't explaining that. And I went, oh, that's convenient.
Okay.
Well, yeah. All my red flags went up because I had the education, because I had taken the time, because I had looked into what the options were. And I'd also implemented this in my life and I was already benefiting from doing so. So I was like, cool. Yeah. Thanks for looking over this stuff with me. I'll think about it.
Yeah, I'll call you.
we never spoke again. So,
and so he was part of the organization that you got licensed to get appointed and go to work.
And I never finished getting licensed.
Was that okay? Yeah, yeah, right. But your exam.
But I took my exam. I did great. And then we had that conversation, and I went, maybe this isn't the company I need to be working with because they're not doing.
So it's just like kind of one more layer peeled back for you to see what they're doing and is not lining up with.
Right. And I'm like, they're not teaching infinite banking and they don't understand this and they're not doing that. And that's what I want to help people do. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe this isn't the way I go about it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the other thing about listening to David talk at the client only event is he was like, I'm not licensed. I'm not an agent. Yeah. And then I went, oh, and that means that I'm not restricted on educating and teaching people stuff. And then people can trust me more because I have nothing to sell them along this. I can just give you, I can tell you my experience. I can tell you how this has benefited me. I can explain to you how it works. I can be somebody that you can say, hey, so I'm thinking about doing this and this is what they're showing me and what do you think? And I can't advise you on what to do with your money, but I can say, you know, that sounds reasonable to me. I would ask this question or that question, you know, or, hey, did you read this book yet? Did you watch this yet? You know, I've been around you and I've heard Ryan speak enough that I would be like, hey, I got a couple of guys, maybe give them a call and have a second opinion, you know? Yeah. So that is my heart is to help people, women especially, feel comfortable knowing they can come to somebody they trust that isn't trying to sell them something and say, hey, how can I do things better? How can I protect myself? How can I protect my children? You know, I basically talk about this with everybody I know. all of my friends, I'm like, have you read this book yet? You need to get this book. Read the book. I'll tell you more, you know, and I'll tell them enough that they go, wait, you can do what? And I'm like, yeah. And they get all excited. And then it's like people get busy or they get discouraged or they get confused maybe, or this is the one that gets me the most. And I want to talk about that today because I think a lot of people they're trapped. A lot of people are trapped in debt.
Yeah.
You know, and two things about debt. One, people are not educated on the fact that our monetary system, our money itself, is debt.
It's a debt obligation.
It's debt.
Yeah.
It is not really backed by anything but itself. And so it's a piece of paper that they can just inflate into infinity and beyond.
I say it this way. We're all born unknowingly into a debt slave construct.
Yeah.
And it takes some longer than others to realize. It took me a long time to realize that. And here I know I'm not the sharpest, you know, knife in the drawer, but, you know, I'm trying to pay attention. I'm a student of history, a student of economics, student of my profession. You know, I'm a capitalist, I'm a salesman, but I'm also a husband, a father, a brother, you know, a son, a cousin, an uncle. So And I believe this profession, like your daddy was in and your grandfather was in, you know, is a very noble profession. Now, of course, it's perverted like every, or can be perverted like any other industry by the characters, you know, that get involved, you know, the people that promote these things that are not really beneficial to the consumer, whether it's knowingly or unknowingly, on their part. And, but debt slave construct took me a long time to figure that out. And it's like, oh my gosh. And, you know, kind of, you know, becoming your own banker, if people knew what that could do for them, if they could actually control the banking, number one, what is the banking function? What is the function of a bank? You know, the movement of money, you know, the current banks can leverage to infinity. There are zero reserve requirements. Exactly. In North America today, in your Federal Reserve, our Federal Reserve banking system, zero requirements. It's interesting. I just had my friend on who's an actual banker the other day, you know, so we kind of talked a little bit about that. Yeah. a local state charter bank, Bobby Lackey, is coming up sometime in the future. It was great. But if you realize or understand, you know, and you don't have to be an expert in any of it. You don't have to have a license. You don't have to have a, you don't have to go through the education. You don't have to be a life insurance expert. But if you look at the banking structure in our economy today, and then the banking function in your life, if you look at how much money you have coming in every year, just annualize a number, whatever it is, and you look at how much money is going away from you and how much of that money is going into the banking system or is a financing charge or is a banking function. And Nelson said it is about 35% of the average bear is 35 cents out of every dollar is finance cost. You know, and today, and the book was printed in 2000, today what I see is 40%, 50%, 55%.
Oh, it's so got to be.
It's terrible. When you really do the math, right? And, you know, and then if just understanding that and then being exposed to the idea, which is the whole purpose of this podcast, the idea that you can become your own banker. Well, what does that mean?
Right.
When you understand what that means and what it means to you and to your family and your future generations, it can be absolutely life changing.
Yeah. And you know, so that kind of brings me back around to people keep saying to me, well, when I finish paying off my debts, then I'll take a look at this. And I want to talk about today, if you can, a little bit about how you can use this as a vehicle to pay off your debts while you're building an asset for yourself and your family.
Yeah, I think I have a module on that, and I'll speak on it.
Is there any way that you can just talk, like, just a brief overview so people can kind of get the idea that they don't have to wait?
Yep.
You know, because if I had found you the year before and had a mountain of debt to deal with, which I did, how would I have gotten out of it? Would there have been a way? Because I think people just feel so defeated.
Yeah. And the short answer is yes. Maybe you could have. Yes, there is a way. And two, you know, as a background, you know, or just today, if you go online and talk about infinite banking, or you just have a conversation about infinite banking, Google and Facebook, and everybody's listening anyway, so you'll get fed up, you know, fed all of this material and content talking about debt, getting out of debt with the infinite banking concept. And that is absolutely something that you can do. But people don't pile up debt because they have an excess of discipline. Now, I understand things happen, health issues, what have you. I'm not even passing a moral judgment here. But it takes discipline to build capital, right? It takes discipline to get out of debt. And so at one time, and if I don't want to get ahead of myself, you know, that is very prevalent today, is like, pay your mortgage off in 6 years, pay your mortgage off in 7 years. Can it be done? Yes, it can be done. It could be captured in 5 or 6 or 7 years. All of that can be done. And getting out of debt is one thing that can be done with a pile of capital, right? You can build capital and get out of debt at the same time. So the short answer is yes, but I built illustrations and spreadsheets, and I even have previous guest, I believe it's Michelle and Junior. I hired her because she's an Excel ninja like 10 or 15 years ago to build out an Excel spreadsheet. Yeah. Here you buy a life insurance policy that's structured correctly, that has cash value, and you list out all your debts, and then you pay off and you pay off your debts, right, and you get out of debt. And so you didn't have to wait, mm-hmm, and you took get out of debt, then accumulate capital. You're doing them at the same time.
Right.
But it takes discipline. Right. And I really stopped doing that on a broad basis because 90% of the clients that would come in, they'd be debt, you know, just swimming in debt. We'd lay out a plan. We'd show them how to get out of debt, and they'd be doing good for 6 months, a year or two. And then, you know, things happen. You know, yeah, mom needed a new car. We needed to go to a European vacation, you know, and the discipline wasn't there.
Right.
So I stopped doing that. Yeah. You know, I mean, I can do that on an individual basis and show people how to get out of debt. And there's no question. I believe I've done a module on this. But here, if you just think about this, if you have a cash flow, right, coming in, and you have debt, and I'm not talking about grocery money. I'm talking about credit cards, you know, personal loans, business loans, lines of credit, whatever. And you can even do it with lines of credit too. But specifically with a life insurance policy, if I have income coming in and I can divert some of that income to pay a premium, mm-hmm, and in that premium, I'm going to accumulate capital. It's going to be slow but consistent. Right. Okay. Then I can leverage that policy. I can collateralize the policy, the cash value, and the whole policy is actually collateralized on a loan. But I can get a loan value just shy of the surrender value of a policy. And then, so I'm accumulating capital. And then if I borrow against that capital, then I can reduce or pay down debt, whether right, it's the smallest one first. There's right, several ways to do that. And so, some are better than others.
Yeah.
But I'm creating an outstanding loan with the life insurance company.
Right. But what you're doing is you're creating a loan with maybe 5 or 6% interest on it and paying off a credit card that's got 20%
right,
so interest on it.
Absolutely,
right?
Can so be arbitrage.
Now we can arbitrage the interest rate.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. And mm-hmm, and free up that weight that is hanging
that's
over
right,
you, right?
And so, if you think about it, if people would have the discipline, you go borrow money, the credit card at 20%, you're not going to miss a credit card payment, right? Just think this through. At 29%, some states are outrageous. You know, I don't know what the limit is, but by the time you have a late fee or service fees or card fees or whatever, the cost of that capital goes above the stated interest rate. Okay. And then, okay, and it's a higher rate. But just think about the discipline that you have to make sure you're not late on bills. If you yeah, treated your own capital and your own cash flows with that much discipline, you'll win.
Right.
Right. Okay. So I pay a premium. There's a cash value. I collateralize that cash value. It does nothing to the policy except create an outstanding loan that's mm-hmm, fully guaranteed and collateralized mm-hmm, by the cash value.
Yep.
So if I take that capital and reduce the loan or eliminate a debt, then I take that payment that was going to the debt and I create a loan repayment to the policy. It comes available, a loan repayment or premium becomes available, you know, 30 days from the receipt on average. And I do it again and again and again.
Right.
So now I'm not spending my time getting out of the hole that I've dug in debt. Right. I'm spending my time learning this concept and building a correctly structured policy. I talk about the noise and structure all day long on purpose, but there are reasons. Okay. And so I'm creating a loan over here, and ultimately that is going to be one of the last loans I repay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, and I've got to maintain discipline through the whole process.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then if you maintain that discipline, all of this 35% of the every dollar going through your hand that's going away from you in debt will wind up in a private banking entity system that you own, a dividend paying whole life insurance. And it's a true win-win. We had fun going a little long today, so we're going to pick it up from here in part two.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.